From Wisconsin Public Radio, you're listening to 2022 election coverage. I'm Ezra Wall. We're looking at two state assembly district races on today's program ahead of the election on Tuesday, November 8th. Later, learn about the 69th Assembly District, including parts of Marathon, Clark, Wood, and Jackson counties. In that race, the incumbent, Republican Donna Roser, faces her challenger, Democrat Lisa Boero. But first, we're in the 67th Assembly District, which includes most of Chippewa County, parts of Dunn and Eau Claire counties. In that race, incumbent Republican Rob Summerfield faces Democrat Jason Bennett. Summerfield talks about his campaign with WPR's Shireen Siewert.
I grew up in Bloomer, went to UW-Stout, met my wife, and came to Bloomer and started a family, ran the Family Supper Club up until about a year and a half ago. In addition to that, as part of a land title company, and I have managed a couple other bars, restaurants, a bowling alley in the past, so that's kind of my background. I've been very active in the community since my time here in Bloomer growing up, involved in the chamber, community club, all the good things that make local small communities great. And about six, seven years ago, I really started discussing with my wife and things like, hey, I would like to get into politics. Didn't know exactly which direction was going to, or what words it going to take me. And then the seat opened up in the year of 2016. I decided to throw my hat in the ring. Fortunately, made it through the primary, got elected in November, and now I am going, hopefully, for my fourth term in office.
As a businessman, then, this is a good question for you. As you know, businesses are facing some significant challenges, lots more jobs open than workers available to fill them. What do you see as a potential solution? What can lawmakers do to help with that?
You know, I think to make it, continue to make Wisconsin a great business climate, especially for small businesses. I know the last 2 years have been very challenging with the governor shutting down the businesses, being able to bounce back. And I know people are still concerned about, the future. The rising costs, inflation came out again for this month of August at high. I'm talking to a lot of business owners with the supply chain and, not being able to get the goods. And if they do get the goods, a lot of them are 10, 15, 20% higher. I was just talking to a restaurant owner about a couple of days ago, and usually a case of potatoes, 50 pounds, usually runs anywhere from $22 to $28 in that range. That's historically, sometimes drops down to 17 of them. But right now, he said last week it was $50 a case.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the challenges. On the state, we did have the committee, I think back in March, a look at the supply chain issues. Those are things we have to, continue to work on as a state. And hopefully working with the federal partners, to make sure that people have the goods, that the inflation, does not put them out of business. What I really like since I've been in office is really working with the school districts and along with local businesses to show the kids, what the opportunities out there. If you're not, are not interested in a four-year degree, hey, maybe there's a two-year degree and the business will maybe even help you pay for it. Start working at 18, 19. Go to school, get your tool and die, whatever degree that the company feels would work good for you, and you're 20 years old, starting off at $19, $20 an hour with the opportunity to, grow within it, too. So I think it's a multi-pronged approach. I've been impressed, with our area, with all the players involved into it, kind of sitting down and figuring out, hey, how do we create a pipeline to help with this situation? So my goal is to continue to work with this and continue to build bridges and being able to, hopefully connect employers with employees and then, continue to grow our area.
Let's talk a little bit about abortion. This has been a hot topic for the last couple of months. Wisconsin's ban was reinstated after the Supreme Court decision. Do you think that Wisconsin's existing abortion law should be updated in any way?
I'm pro-life. I support exceptions for the life of the mother when they're in danger in the cases of rape and incest. And I know the coming months there's be, a lot of debate, people very passionate, in the state to discuss this issue.
let's talk a little bit about elections. There's been a lot of talk about election integrity, and there have been multiple government audits that show no evidence of fraud in the 2020 election. But some Wisconsin voters still have concerns about election integrity. So how do you address those concerns and restore faith in the voting process for those voters who feel that way?
Yeah, and that's why, you know, this last session we passed, I think, 12 bills out of the assembly. You know, a lot of the bills were to clean up the gray areas. And then when I'm out talking to people, I explain, you know, the scenarios that are out there. And I think the more and more we talk, you know, the clerks, officials, you know, everybody that's involved in the process, to sit down and kind of explain, you know, how the things work. Make sure that there's not misinformation out there. And if there are some issues that are, you know, like I was mentioned before, in the gray area, let's clean them up, make sure that there's no questioning if this is proper or not. So that's what I've been working to. You know, I've talked to a lot of people about this issue. And I think when we get done talking to people, like, okay, I kind of get it. I get where the system is. And I think that's how we do it. Just you got to continue to talk with people about this.
We're talking with Rob Summerfield, who is running as a Republican for Wisconsin's 67th Assembly District. You touched a little bit on post-K-12 education a few moments ago, but on the issue of K-12 education, what do you think your top priority is?
My priority, you know, what for the kids, what's the best for each child? You know, I've talked to numerous parents in the last 2 years, you know, with the COVID, with the shutdowns, you know, the mental angst a lot of kids had. Fortunate in our area, most of the schools, you know, reopened right away as soon as they could to get them out there. But with that, you know, there's some learning environments that kids, a certain kid maybe does not, you know, it just doesn't jive with them. And my, you know, my thoughts are, let's make sure what's the best situation for this child, because not every child's different. You know, my three daughters all go to public schools. You know, they've got a very good system in place, but sometimes that doesn't work for an individual. I don't make sure, you know, we don't care about, you know, what everybody else thinks. We want to think what's best for each individual child. So I'm continuing to work on that, what's best for the kids.
There's been a lot of talk about what role schools should play in teaching children about social issues like race and sexuality. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a proper time for that. But I think, you know, in the beginning, kids, you know, get back to the basics, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic. And then, you know, then we can explore. And I really want the parents to be involved. I think that's the biggest thing is whatever the schools are deciding, to, you know, to touch on, make sure the parents are involved and let the parents decide, you know, is this proper or not? You know, because there's a lot of things out there that people have differing opinions on. And I think, you know, the parents know what's best for their children. So if we can keep the parents involved, that will make our education system successful.
Turning to public safety for a moment, how do we keep our schools and communities safe? And I'm talking about in the wake of recent deadly shootings. There's been a lot of talk about this as well. And how can you accomplish this while balancing Second Amendment rights?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, in the last years, you know, we've had tragedies. But, you know, I think once, you know, the communities, we've passed a bill, you know, to make sure that the schools have a plan in case of tragedies like this, circumstances. And I think that's where a lot of, you know, discussion needs to be is, like, how do we protect our kids, make sure there's safeguards in place, and give them the resources that they need to hopefully prevent these tragedies. And to also invest, I really think I've been proud, you know, when my first budget, we put money in for mental health, and we continue to grow that. I think we need to continue to get into the mental health to figure out and help these children or young adults that are doing these horrific acts and, you know, hopefully prevent them and give them, you know, the support that they need so they do not do this.
Where do you see opportunities for bipartisan cooperation? Obviously, Wisconsin has kind of a unique situation. We have a Democratic governor, a Republican-controlled legislature, and that can lead to some gridlock. So what can you see as areas that you can work together and really move forward for Wisconsin?
You know, I think, you know, since I've been in office, pretty much every session, about close to 90% of the bills are bipartisan. So there's a lot of things that did not get the, you know, the flashy headlines of, you know, things being accomplished. You know, I think, one of the things that we have worked on is broadband. I think there's agreement on there. However, there is, you know, differing views. Unfortunately, the governor vetoed my bill for $500 million for broadband. We ended up getting, I think, a little over $200 million for it. But, you know, that's one thing I think most people can get on, you know, on board with. You know, the workforce, too. Once again, there are differing opinions on how we get there, but I think everybody sees the needs for working on that. You know, those are, you know, the two things, you know, the taxes, are different ideas once again on it, but I think everybody wants government to be responsible and have a good budget, which we've seen, you know, this last budget governor signed with, you know, Republicans controlled of the Senate and Assembly, and we did get a couple of Democrats to vote for this budget. So, you know, I continue to see, you know, that there's opportunities to work together on these issues.
When it comes to the environment, so many communities across the state are struggling to find ways to address contamination by PFAS and other chemicals in their local water supplies around the state. How should the state address contamination? What are some solutions?
You know, I mean, I think right now, you know, with the feds, you know, putting out the standards, you know, that's one way to see where we're at. And, you know, looking at technologies, you know, I've been reading, you know, with PFAS, you know, there's potentially for some treatments with the water. You know, now I think with the firefighting foams that aren't being used, hopefully, you know, that will alleviate more contamination. But, you know, those are the ideas that look into to see, hey, where are these problem sources coming from? And then let's address them. And then hopefully figure out the technology, et cetera, to make sure that people have the water that they need.
We've got about 2 minutes left together, and I just want to give you the opportunity to just share the things that separate you from other candidates. I mean, what do you want people to know about you when they head to the polls in November?
Yeah, well, you know, it's been truly an honor for the last three terms to serve the 67th Assembly District in Madison. You know, I always go down there. I do what's the best for my community, out and about, talking to people, sometimes disagreeing, but I think most people in our area knows that I truly care about what's going on, and I work my best off to make sure that I'm representing our area very strong in Madison. I think my committee chairmanships, the leadership I've shown in our area down in Madison, has been a huge positive for our area.
That's Republican Rob Summerfield, the current Assembly representative in the 67th District. He faces the Democratic challenger Jason Bennett in the election on Tuesday, November 8th. We'll hear from Bennett next. This is election coverage from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's election coverage from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall. Coming up here from the candidates in Wisconsin's 69th Assembly District ahead of Tuesday, November 8th's election. But first, we're continuing our look at the 67th Assembly, where Republican Rob Summerfield faces Democrat Jason Bennett, who talks about his campaign with WPR's Shireen Seward.
I'm a speech therapist that has lived in this area for the last 11 years, and I've lived in the western half of Wisconsin most of my life. And as a speech therapist, I've worked with some very vulnerable populations. I've worked in early intervention. I've worked in schools. I've worked in nursing facilities where people are on Medicare, Medicaid, and I've seen the effect that cuts at the state level and the federal level have on the most vulnerable of families. And it's been foremost in my mind for several years. So that's my background. I'm a speech therapist, not a politician. But a couple of cycles ago, I got really interested in politics and doing as much as I could at the local level with politics. I did phone banking during the 2020 campaign, and that got me involved with the local party, the Chippewa County Democrats. We were having a fundraiser in March, and someone mentioned there was no one running in the 67th. And I said, well, that's a shame. If it's just someone, you know, if we just need someone on the ballot, put me on it. I had no idea how it worked. I had no idea how you got on the ballot. Next thing I know, Madison's calling me, and I'm getting signatures, and I'm on the ballot. That's who I am, and that's why I'm running.
Okay.
I was especially motivated by the Dobbs decision, the leak of the Dobbs decision, and of course, by the time it was official, I was already on the ballot.
But, well, let's talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about the Dobbs decision. I mean, obviously, Wisconsin's 172-year-old abortion ban was reinstated after this decision. What do you support? Do you support exceptions to the law for cases? Should Wisconsin's existing abortion law be updated in any way? What are your thoughts?
I believe that the choice to have an abortion or to continue a pregnancy is up to the pregnant person and their family and medical team and whoever they decide to confide in. I would support putting action into place that makes abortion more accessible for everyone in Wisconsin, rural Wisconsin especially.
Let's talk a little bit about the economy. This is something that is on so many people's minds. One issue is businesses who are facing significant workforce challenges, more jobs open than workers available to fill them. What do you think lawmakers could do to help mitigate this situation?
I do think lawmakers need to focus a lot more on the education of our nation's students, starting with early intervention and kindergarten and elementary school, because the reality is we're not preparing people who are prepared to work. We're not preparing people who are prepared to, if they choose to serve in the military. People aren't able to pass the literacy tests needed to serve in the military. So at the legislative level, we have to think about workforce development from the get-go. Not that the entire point of life is to work or anything like that, but we need to be preparing students to be ready for the workforce, ready for higher education. And we also need to be preparing and offering training opportunities and things like tax credits, perhaps, for employers who employ people who are re-entering society or retraining in a new field if their field went obsolete. Or, for example, if we start working on clean energy products, making sure that we're investing in making sure the workers are protected and trained to do, their new, if they're working in a coal plant, that they're trained to work in a new field.
So, Jason, another part of the economy that's on a lot of people's mind, inflation. This is a top of mind issue for many working families in Wisconsin. What do you think could be done at the state level?
I think there can be things like Governor Evers' gas tax to cut costs to the consumers wherever the state is able to offer a break without harming services down the line or revenues down the line.
I want to talk about elections, too. As I'm sure you know, there have been multiple government audits that show no evidence of fraud in the 2020 election, but some voters still have concerns about election integrity. How do you think that you would address those concerns and ensure that faith is restored in the voting process for those voters?
Well, I fear that, if the facts haven't persuaded them, they may be hard to persuade. But I think the best thing I could suggest is to ask them to get involved at their local level, volunteering as a poll worker. My husband is a poll worker, or he was until I was running for office, and now he's running his own campaign. But we, being there and hearing what they go through at the local level in tiny little Triple County, if I'd ever had doubts in the election system, I wouldn't anymore, because they are so thorough. They are so careful. They double check everything. They catch errors quickly. They address them. So that would be my suggestion to anyone who still doubts it. I would want them to experience it firsthand. And I actually think that might have happened in the last cycle, because there were quite a few new faces at my polling place, and they were clearly learning the ropes. I'm a frequent voter, so I recognize the usual suspects.
Mm-hmm.
I know from being involved in our county party that the opposing party actually sent a lot of people to be like observers and poll workers because of the fears of election integrity issues. And I got the feeling from those workers, and of course I don't know if they were, Republicans or Democrats or anything like that. It was very nonpartisan, very, very well run. But I got the feeling that they recognized that there were so many checks and balances in place that fraud would be next to impossible.
Considering your background, I'm guessing you're going to have some strong feelings on education. What would you say is your top priority?
My top priority would be making sure that students have early access to special education interventions that they, if they need it, starting as early as 3 years old. Even earlier, early intervention starts before three, but when they're in the school system at three, they should have access to high quality special ed services that fit their educational needs. And the funding for that has been sort of stagnant / going away. And that is a terrible thing, because I've seen students in second and third grade who are already performing two or three levels below their grade level peers. So when we talk about things like, free college or reducing college or free tech school or 2 years of college free, I mean, I think those are all great ideas, but I think we have to start with making sure every kid gets an equal shot of attaining good educational outcomes in elementary, middle, and high school first. So that would be where my focus is, in that early, those early years of learning when students start to separate into high achievers and low achievers and trying to help boost those low achievers up.
As the back to school season was underway, we heard a lot from school districts around the state that said that they were really struggling to find and attract and maintain qualified teachers for their districts. There was quite a shortage in a number of districts. What do you think can be done to attract qualified teachers in Wisconsin and to address that shortage?
Well, I think we need to take a look at some of the changes that have been made in the last 10 to 12 years. We've lost a lot of good teachers in the last 10 to 12 years because of changes made at the state level. And I think we need to reverse as many of those as we can, because it's showing up in our educational performance. Although we are back up to eighth in the state, it starts with quality teachers. You can't do what I just talked about and provide great early intervention services if you don't have teachers. and you need that at every level of education. And I think we have to reverse some of those policies from the 2010-2012 era. And I think we have to actually throw as much funding as we can, again, without shorting something else down the line, into attracting teachers, maintaining teachers, and making sure that they are working at the top, what we call the top of their license.
What do you think the role of schools should be in teaching children about social issues? There's a lot of discussion about this right now, such as race or sexuality. What's the role of schools versus parents?
I think it is very important that children understand they come from a diverse community, and that there are, people might have different household situation than what they consider the norm in their home. Because, when you get to school, you think your family is like everyone else's very frequently. And I think it's a normal part of education to learn that people have different backgrounds, different perhaps cultural or religious beliefs. So I think that because school is such a natural community gathering place and the social interactions are so key to the school experience, it would be irresponsible not to have some structure in place to make sure that kids learn about those issues safely and in a way that doesn't present a bias. The truth is, sometimes we do bring biases from home that we're not even conscious of. So I think it should be a shared responsibility ultimately, but that the school should have a structure in place, just to be clear.
I want to talk about public safety. There's really a national conversation about this. How do we keep our schools and communities safe in the wake of recent deadly shootings?
I think what we need to do is we need to really work with gun owners and gun manufacturers to increase responsibility. One idea that I've floated about that doesn't seem to have heat against it in either direction would be treating guns like you treat a house or a car or a plot of land, and having liability insurance, liability coverages for it, making sure that that gun owners are responsible for the actions that may happen with their weapon. I also think another huge issue would be mental health issues, as well as school security. Fortunately, I've worked in lots of schools where they have security doors, so you're buzzed in. That doesn't always work in a mass shooting situation, but it's a problem that's too big for one solution, but those are three ideas.
This is such a divided state. We have an interesting government structure here where we have a Democrat as a governor and a Republican-controlled legislature. Where do you see some opportunities for bipartisan cooperation?
Well, I would hope there could be some bipartisan cooperation on some of the economic issues, because I think ultimately, perhaps not the particular people in the legislature now on certain sides of the aisle, but definitely Wisconsinites, whether they identify as Republican or they identify as a Democrat or independent, they feel very strongly about economic issues, and they want to see good jobs and good property values and all of those things, good schools. And I think we can reach across the aisle to get some of these economic and educational issues solved. It does seem right now we're in a position, which is another one of the reasons I'm running, we're in a position where anything our governor does is automatically bad, according to the legislature. I follow Speaker Voss, and I see him taking credit for things that Evers did if it's good, and denying it if it's bad. And I just don't think that is what most Wisconsinites want. I think they want us to be in Madison working on solutions that benefit everyone in the state. and not necessarily care about credit. So I think there are things that can be done if we listen to our voters and we focus more on the results than on who's going to take credit or whether it was a Democratic idea or a Republican idea.
Jason, I want to thank you for sharing your perspective with us and joining us today for this.
Thank you for having me.
That's Jason Bennett with WPR's Shireen Seward. Bennett, a Democrat, faces Republican Rob Summerfield in the race for Wisconsin's 67th Assembly seat in the election on Tuesday, November the 8th. The district includes most of Chippewa County and parts of Dunn and Eau Claire counties. We now turn our attention to the 69th Assembly. That's in Marathon, Clark, Wood, and Jackson counties, or parts thereof. There, the incumbent is Republican Donna Roser. Her Democratic opponent is Lisa Boero. I talked with Donna Roser about her campaign.
So I live in Marshfield. Marshfield is in Wood County, which is part of the 69th Assembly District. I've been on the Wood County Board for a number of years and have been in a variety of leadership positions on that board. So when Representative Culp decided not to seek re-election, he called me and asked me if I would be interested in running. It took me a couple weeks to decide whether I wanted to do that or not. I was at the time teaching for UW-Eau Claire College of Nursing. I had been on the faculty of that College of Nursing since January of 2009. I also was a nurse working casual on 3 North, which is a cardiac medical surgical floor at what is now Marshfield Medical Center. So I told him that I would do it. I ended up retiring from my nurse educator role at UW-Eau Claire College of Nursing at the Marshfield site. And then I stopped working as a nurse on 3 North in December of 2020 after I got elected. I am a widow. My husband was a cardiothoracic surgeon that unfortunately got occupationally acquired HIV infection and died of AIDS in the 90s. I have 5 adopted children and 6 grandchildren. We moved to Wisconsin in the 80s when my husband took a job at the Marshfield Clinic as a cardiothoracic surgeon. And life has just been really full. I grew up in Virginia, born in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, and we moved quite a bit while Ed was pursuing his career in cardiothoracic surgery. So that kind of is who I am. I'm still serving on the Wood County Board of Supervisors, still active in my church, active in my community, and love having served the 69th Assembly District over the last 2 years.
Let's kick off our conversation talking a little bit about the economy and some of the challenges that people are facing, particularly businesses, as they look to fill out their workforces. We've got more jobs open than we have people trying to fill them at the moment. So what can lawmakers do to help mitigate that situation?
Well, workforce issues are across the board. They were in nursing, they're in law enforcement, they're in some pretty critical areas of our society. And so I have always been interested in the youth apprenticeship program in the high school. I believe that getting people into the workforce in their area of expertise and interest is as important as it can be. The other thing that we can do is incentivize people to enter various professions. I was very supportive of a $5 million grant that is going to master's and PhD or doctorate, not just PhD, but doctorally prepared nurses, because you can't have nurse force without having people to teach them. And so I was supportive of a $5 million grant that nurses can apply for becoming nurse educators. There are similar things that we can do in other areas to encourage people to enter those professions. We just don't have enough people. That's one of the problems. There just aren't enough people. So I'm very supportive of legal immigration in order to bring people into our country to work. As a county board supervisor, we have workforce issues with nursing in our nursing homes and health departments, the departments that employ nurses. So one thing that we are pursuing is the international nursing program. and I've been very supportive of that. So we just need to increase the amount of people that we have in order to enter professions and then get them doing so as soon as possible.
And the other side of the economic picture that affects individuals on a personal level is concerns about inflation. Can the legislature have any impact on that issue?
Well, one thing that we can do is help people keep more money in their pocket. I think that you know that the Republican budget of the last biennium flattened the income tax rates from 4 to 3, and that allowed the lower income brackets to keep about $1,200 to $1,400 more money in their pocket. Inflation is just nothing but a tax on the lower socioeconomic individuals. Makes me sick that we have had to even deal with inflation. That could be a whole nother topic, but the main thing that we can do as legislators with inflation is to allow people to keep as much money as they can allow them to keep.
Another issue that's always interesting to talk about in politics, but it's especially pertinent to state legislative races this year, is abortion, with Wisconsin's 172-year-old abortion ban being reinstated after the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade. Do you see any need to make adjustment to that law, or is there any way in which you'd like that issue to be approached by the legislature?
Well, we have a law on the books. There are no surgical abortions being done in Wisconsin at the current time. I'm certain that chemical abortions are still being done. People can order those medications online, and that's the state of the issue. I am pro-life. I have been endorsed by both Wisconsin Right to Life and Pro-Life Wisconsin. I believe in the sanctity of life from conception to natural death. Of course, I would support a life of the mother exemption. I look forward to discussing rape and incest exceptions. As you probably know, the governor and our attorney general have sued the legislature over that 1849 law, calling it archaic and out of date. We'll have to see how that progresses, because depending on what happens there, there will be more discussions in the state legislature about possible exemptions from that 1849 law. We'll just have to see how that plays out. And I, being a pro-life individual, I look forward to participating in that conversation.
Education is not only an issue that is very important to people who have students, children, and their families, but also an issue on which the state government expends a huge amount of money. What would your priorities be, your top priorities on the issue of education?
Well, I believe in education. I'm a first-generation college graduate. I believe that education can increase somebody's socioeconomic status, and statistics show that that people who are well-educated do better financially over a lifetime. So I'm very supportive of education. I taught nursing students. I homeschooled my children for a while before my husband became too very sick. I believe we need an educated, literate society. There's a lot of concern that there's not education occurring in the public schools, that some of it is indoctrination. That's why I support school choice. I believe parents need to be in charge of their children's education, and I support having money follow students so parents can make a decision about what environment they would like their children to be educated in. So I am so supportive of education, secondary education, higher education, technical education, anything that helps people to be productive, contributing members of society, I would support. And you're right, there's a lot of people support that idea, but there's a lot of people that have differing opinions on how we reach that end. So I was on the Assembly Education Committee and really enjoyed a lot of the issues that came before that committee, and I'm sure that they will continue to come before that committee. And I look forward to continuing to support education and the routes that get us to an educated, literate society.
How much authority should parents have, speaking of their involvement in their children's education, over each specific aspect of curriculum that's taught to kids at school?
100%. 100%. A parent should be totally in charge of what their children are taught.
And that would apply to like the day-to-day, like each parent should be like in charge of like overlooking lesson plans, saying, I don't want you to teach this to my kid, this is okay? Or are you talking at like the administrative level as education policy decisions are being
made?
Nope.
I believe that a parent should know 100% what their child is being taught in the classroom. And that's why I supported in the state legislature complete transparency of curriculum so that parents knew what their children were being taught on a day-to-day basis.
As we close our conversation, Donna Roser, the incumbent in the 69th Assembly, running for re-election, I want to ask you, as a Republican, you mentioned there are things that you believe in that just ideologically set you apart from your Democratic colleagues, and I want to ask you about distinguishing yourself between you and your opponent, Lisa Boero, the Democrat in this race. In our remaining time, what separates you from your opponent, and what do you want voters to know about that?
Well, I think just because we're members of different parties, there's some division right there. Experience would also be another thing. I have a lot of experience representing constituencies and talking to people at the doors and representing them over the years. I believe I bring a unique perspective to the state legislature as a nurse. All of us come to the state legislature with a specific niche, and we use that to educate people on issues. I believe I represent my district. I think that you know that I won my district in the general election 2 years ago by about 66%. So I outperformed the demographics of the district. So I believe I represent the values of the 69th Assembly District, and I believe I've done that well. I've been out and about a lot over the last 2 years talking to people, and I have been recognized for some of the efforts that I've made to represent the people in my district. So I think the contrast is not only between parties. I'm pro-life. I believe in parental responsibility for their children in their in the educational arena. And I believe that I have represented the 69th Assembly District well over the last 2 years, and that experience will only be foundational as I move into the next legislative session.
Donna Roser is the Republican running for re-election in the 69th Assembly against the Democrat Lisa Boero. The 69th Assembly encompasses parts of Clark, Marathon, Wood, and Jackson counties, and that election, of course, is on Tuesday, November the 8th. Donna, thank you very much for joining us on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
The 69th Assembly District includes parts of Marathon, Clark, Wood, and Jackson counties. Coming up, we'll hear from the Democratic candidate in that race, Lisa Boero. That's next. You're listening to election coverage from Wisconsin Public Radio. Election coverage from Wisconsin Public Radio continues. I'm Ezra Wall. The 69th Assembly District includes parts of Marathon, Clark, Wood, and Jackson counties. We've heard from the incumbent in that race, Republican Donna Roser. Now we'll hear from the Democratic candidate, Lisa Boero, who talked to me about why she's running in the 69th.
I'm an attorney by training, I've been an attorney at firms and then corporate entities. I've done a lot of work in healthcare and immigration and litigation and any number of areas. And I'm also an author. I have 7 books. They're murder mysteries. One series is set partially in Marshfield, Wisconsin, which is where I live. So it's been great fun writing about my local area. I grew up in a family that prided, hard work and education. My dad's family were Illinois dairy farmers. And my dad, you know, was one of those farm kids that taught himself calculus on the bus, you know, during the hour-long bus ride, and then became a scientist and now has just retired and, you know, has a lot of patentable work in the radiation therapy planning software area. So, you know, certainly has done a lot of great things with his career and his education. My mom's family, my grandfather was a survivor of Pearl Harbor, made the Air Force his career afterwards. You know, my mom, I think growing up in a family that valued service as they did, became an elementary school teacher and, you know, was one of those teachers that kids remember fondly years later and, you know, really gave back to her community in that way. So, you know, obviously growing up in a family like that, you know, I was exhorted to go out there and work hard and get an education. And then to try to give back. And so, you know, I've tried to do that throughout my legal career. I've certainly tried to do that with my books, you know, highlighting some of the great things about Marshfield and all the area around Marshfield. And now, obviously, in terms of the political arena, I see gaps. I see things that my area needs and you know, wanted to get involved.
Wisconsin's 172-year-old abortion ban is now the law of the land once again now that the Supreme Court has overturned Roe versus Wade. According to a recent Gallup poll, though, 13% of people oppose abortion in all circumstances, but 35% of people support abortion rights under all circumstances, and 50% of people support abortion rights under at least some circumstances. How should legislators or even should legislators address Wisconsin's existing law?
We're dealing with a law that was passed in 1849. So obviously we need to have the law of the land, you know, be determined based on something that is more recent than that. I am somebody who believes that women have a right to reproductive health care. And I also, as a mom, know that, you know, pregnancy is can be very dicey. And you know, lots of things can go wrong. So I want to do whatever we can do from a legislative perspective to give women and their physicians the room to maneuver to make those really difficult decisions. We do need legislation. The current state of the law is unsettled, and that's not helpful to you know, women who are of reproductive age or to the physicians who will be attending them. A majority of women believe, and rightly so, that they have control over their own bodies and should continue to do so. Unfortunately, it's a sad state of affairs that, you know, my daughter has fewer rights at her age now than I did at her age. So this is something that has to be dealt with, and it has to be dealt with now.
We're speaking today with Lisa Boero, who's the Democratic candidate in the 69th Assembly. She'll be facing the incumbent, Republican Donna Roser, on November the 8th. Education is a top-of-mind issue for a lot of parents, and we've seen news clips of parents becoming increasingly involved to one extent or another, attending board meetings over concerns related to pandemic or concerns related to curriculum or other things. We've also heard talk about funding issues for public schools. WPR published an article indicating that Wisconsin has a record number in terms of dollar amounts of funding on this very election's ballot referendums. So what if elected, would be your top educational priority as a legislator?
Well, I think there are a couple. Funding is number is, you know, it has to be at the top of the list. And I think the number of referendums and the dollar amounts requested for those referendums does give you an indication of how underfunded our schools are in Wisconsin. And when I say schools, I mean not just schools at an elementary, high school level, but also our university system. I think that, you know, funding is primary, and it drives a lot of other issues. I also think that we really, really, really need to think about how we are supporting our teachers. We are looking at teacher shortages across the board. Those shortages are more dire in rural areas, and those are the very areas where we need those teachers the most in a lot of cases. And so I think that, you know, while I know that there have been parents who were very concerned about certain issues with schools, unfortunately, sometimes those concerns have translated into attacks on teachers. And it's very difficult to recruit good people to a profession where you are potentially not paid what you're worth. It's an extremely difficult job to begin with. And on top of that, you're facing threats by parents and others who disagree with how you or how the school is handling certain issues. So I think a lot of work is yet to be done and needs to be done, because if we don't do that work, we are going to have a really difficult time providing appropriate public education for all students in the state, and but particularly for rural students.
It's easy to see how kids wouldn't fare very well if their parents weren't involved in their education. How do you balance that? How much say should parents have over curriculum that's taught to their children at school, especially on issues that we've heard addressed in recent years about social issues like race or sexuality?
Well, I mean, I think obviously, as everybody knows, even though every school is local, there is, you know, there is state level curriculum, right, that you have to get through. So, you know, parents are going to have a limit to what they can control at an individual level, just because you have to make sure that your kids are getting the appropriate education, you know, in math and reading, et cetera, et cetera. That said, I understand parents' concerns about, you know, the books that their kids are reading or the material that they're being taught. However, I think parents need to understand that what you are trying to do in a school is you are trying to provide educational resources for all students. So just because in your particular situation, you may have a particular view, it doesn't mean that that is the same for every parent in the district. And so I think districts have usually done a good job to balance out parental concerns and to make sure that education is equitable for every student and for every family. But you can't have one-to-one control with public education because, as I said, you have to deal with state-level mandates anyway. So you can't do that. On the other hand, I would also suggest to parents who are very concerned about particular books that are in student libraries, et cetera, I hate to say this as a person who loves libraries and loves to read, a lot of the information that students are getting is not going to be found in the student, you know, in a library of a school. It's going to be found on the internet. So perhaps concerns that have been directed at school libraries really need to be turned around, and maybe you should take a look at what's on your child's phone if you were very, very concerned.
We've got about a minute left. I want to give you an opportunity to set yourself apart specifically from your opponent. And by the way, just to remind our listeners, we're speaking with Lisa Boero, who's the Democratic candidate in the race for the 69th Assembly. She's running against the incumbent, Republican Donna Roser. The 69th Assembly District encompasses parts of Clark, Marathon, Wood, and Jackson County. So Lisa, what do you think it is that sets you apart from your opponent in this race?
Well, I think, what I've just described in terms of my view of the fact that the Second Amendment is not absolute, I think that's probably a defining point. My view on the rights of women to have appropriate reproductive health care, that is also probably a distinction. My opponent has weighed in on school issues, particularly associated with masking and that kind of thing, but she hasn't been a strong advocate for school funding or for supportive teachers. So I think that definitely sets us apart. Another issue that I think I'm just going to throw out there, and it's because not that she's had a definitive position on this, but she certainly, to my mind, hasn't necessarily been an advocate, is, I mean, my district is in a rural area. That rural healthcare is at a crisis point. Rural hospitals took the brunt of the pandemic, and they are suffering. And we all know that, you know, when a rural hospital closes, it does not reopen. And that leaves huge care gaps for all of the people who live in that area. So that is one of the pieces of my campaign that I've been strong and forceful about. And I don't know that I have seen much on the other end. So I would say, you know, the value that I place on rural healthcare and the importance of that, and, you know, my desire to make sure that rural health systems are appropriately supported financially so that you don't have a wave of hospital closures right as we are still dealing with pandemic issues. I think those are the issues that are really going to set me apart from what my opponent has been talking about.
That's Lisa Boero, the Democratic candidate in the 69th Assembly. As I mentioned before, she faces the incumbent, Republican Donna Roser, in the election on Tuesday, November the 8th. Lisa, thank you very much for joining us on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you so much.
We've heard on today's show about the 69th Assembly and the 67th Assembly races. For more information about this year's elections, check out WPR.org/election22. Of course, you can find all of WPR's political coverage always on WPR.org/politics. I'm Ezra Wall. Thanks for joining us this week for election coverage from Wisconsin Public Radio.